Harriet was in the prime of her life and in excellent form. Her long, sculpted face, untroubled by the vicissitudes of aging, had grown into its virtues, with large eyes the blacker side of brown, and a mouth at once pert and proud, the lower lip protruding a little beyond its counterpart, capable of a moue as much as an extravagant smile, the whole visage set off by a mane of wavy black hair that shone in the sunlight without a flicker of silver to be seen. She was a woman of grandiosity, bedecked as she liked to be in a calf-length dress of vintage 20s. She had taken on the dowager look, her presence imposing, perhaps off-putting to all but the most courageous. Over the years, she had attracted few lovers, and ever since her one passion curdled, she had remained single. She led a secluded life, one that provided fertile and slightly acidic soil for her eccentricity to flourish like an azalea. Yet quirkiness was a quality she reserved for her friends, the two women with whom she shared much of her time, hardy perennials Rosalind Spears and Phoebe Ashworth. Together they were three stalwarts for decades remaining in the same garden bed set against the same stone wall of personal tradition, enjoying the comforts of moisture and shade. She was suddenly uncomfortably hot, after a quick glance in the direction of the pianola she stood. It had been an unusually warm late winter's day, and at last a cool breeze blew in through the front windows. She went and drew the curtains further aside, curtains of luxurious sanguine velvet, gorgeous to touch. Curtains her daughter had said in one of her vinegary moments were more likely to be found in the boudoir of a courtesan. The garden was admirable at that time of year, long and wide and south-facing, and shaded on the high side by a stand of mountain ash with a half-moon raised bed that coursed much of the garden's width, retained by a low bluestone wall. Her gaze lingered here and there over the ajugas, columbines, penstemons, and erigenon daisies, at last settling on the delicate leaves of the weeping Japanese maple, and the hellebores and euphorbias at its base. A wide drive of crushed limestone wound its way from door to carport, and thence to gate, skirting the wall where the raised bed was widest. To either side of the gate, two rhododendrons provided privacy, and together with a row of tree ferns, dogwoods, and camellias, formed a dark backdrop. At times she felt like liberating the garden from that herbage screen, throwing the space open to the crescent, but her privacy mattered more. A handful of youngsters had gathered outside the garden of next door but one, and she could hear their laughter. It wouldn't be long before they were gone, but she pulled the windows to the mullion, fastened the handles, and moved aside. She wasn't normally bothered by juvenile activity, any more than she was given to gazing out her front window, yet she wanted to shut out distractions, even as she shut in the dissonance at once familiar and disappointing. Her daughter had taken possession of the other end of the room, ambulating the space between the pianola and the fireplace like a cougar in a cage. Jenny was nothing like her mother, a tall and willowy woman, with hands narrow and long as were her feet. From an early age, her hands appeared destined for the keys, her feet to slosh about in too wide shoes, manufacturers assuming that long feet were also always wide. Feet aside, she was the image of her maternal grandmother. She had the same fine mousy hair and wan pallor, the same small and round mouth that formed an O when she parted her lips, and the same grey eyes that looked through to the back of you with innocence and suspicion. Grey accented by her choice of grey slacks and matching grey shirt, the only colour about her person that ghastly paisley print jacket, a relic from the paisley period of her teenage years. It was a bizarre spectacle, watching her grey squirrel of a daughter, more quarry than predator, more suited to a birchwood than a rocky range, prowl back and forth across the Kashan rug. She had not been an assertive child, and there was a time Harriet had worried her biddable nature would be a disadvantage in a competitive world. But as a teenager, Jenny had acquired a measure of defiance, a sure sign of an independent will. The symbol she had chosen for this defiance was paisley. Whatever she wore, dress, skirt, trousers or shirt, it had to be paisley. Harriet was steadfast in the belief that Jenny wore the design not because she liked it, but to cause her mother distress. William Morris, Harriet may have endured, at least he was contemporaneous, with her era, but there was something so 70s in the look. The 70s, that accursed decade when the hippies took hold of the occult and turned it into fairy floss. And there her daughter was in her paisley jacket, pacing back and forth.